Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Johnny. I'm the campus pastor here, and so good to see all of you. Allow me to add my welcome to hopefully the several that you have already received here this morning. If you've been hanging out with us, you know up until Easter, we had engaged in this series that we called Re-Engage. Then Easter happened, then we finished that series up the second week in April. And here we are, the fifth Sunday in April. It feels like April has gone on forever. Anybody else just like, whether it's been like winter in April or summer in April or spring in April, it just feels like April just has gone on and on and on. And here we are the last Sunday. And so we finished up this Re-Engage series, and we've now been inviting you. We have three little one-off series, which normally we do series, but we're doing three little one-off Sundays, these last three Sundays in April. A couple weeks ago, Samir and Jackie were here with Dwar Church from Delhi, India. It was so great to have them. And last week, Rachel Gilson was here helping us talk about the gospel and LGBT plus topics. And today, we're going to continue to ask you to engage in something new, something unique, and something different. And a lot of that has to do with something that's actually happening out at the Kennett campus. We're not experiencing it here yet at Jennersville, but I want to talk to you about it, and we're going to lean into that same idea and that same topic. You see, out at Kennett here this morning, they are actually having the very first ever full-on bilingual service. And there's a reason for that. Some of you may have seen an email that Pastor Greg, our lead pastor, sent out yesterday, letting us know that in January, we actually kind of adopted slash inherited a church, a church where they do their services in Spanish. They found themselves without a pastor. They found themselves without a place to meet. And so through a relationship with one of our staff members, Gustavo Castañeda, they came to Willowdale and said, hey, we want to keep meeting as a church. We want to keep having our services. And so Gustavo has done this amazing job of helping them that since January, the second service out of Kennett campus. So right now they would be starting their full-on Spanish-speaking service in the Commons, which is underneath the old chapel, if you're familiar with the old building. And so something cool that's happening is that because they've been here and been a part of the church, Greg and the leadership on Kennett said, hey, let's do a full-on bilingual service. Sermon is being translated. The music was in half English, half Spanish. The opportunities were translated, the announcements, all of that. And the thing that I love about this story is that this church that's coming and that's meeting during second service, it's not just like this random group of people who just kind of like sneak like in the side door and go have their service and are on their own. But Gustavo has helped them engage in the church at large. So they're greeting at the front doors. The people from the church are serving coffee. They're helping with check-in at children's ministry. They're serving in children's ministry. They're just engaging in all these different ways, parking ministry, safety team, trying to figure out what it looks like to roll them in. Some of them are going to first service and then going to the Spanish-speaking service down in second service. They're fully engaging in our church, and we love that because that's what we want. In fact, today there's even this big celebration at the end of second service, and you're more than welcome to go out there. Don't get up and leave right now. But after service, there's this big potluck happening out at the Kennett campus. Love to just go ahead out there after the service. I'll be going out. Love to have you just be a part of what's going on out there. Potluck normally means you take food. So if you haven't done that, if you weren't planning on it, Giant's across the street and you can grab something and then roll on out. They'll love your pre-made brownies or whatever you buy as you go over there. But here's the cool thing about this. If that isn't already cool enough, the cooler thing about this is that this is something that we have been praying for and asking God to do as a church. We've been asking him for this. A few years back, Greg actually started talking about and leading our staff and our church in what we've been calling kind of our diversity initiative. That we want God to help our church kind of reflect our area more and be more diverse. Now, out of that, God has answered our prayers in several different ways. I mean, first, you heard me mention Gustavo's name. Gustavo came on staff a few years ago, and Gustavo has been a really huge bridge between the Spanish-speaking community and our church. Not only in Kennett, but also out here in West Grove. And when Gustavo came on staff, not only do we have Willowdale Espanol meeting, but some of you remember just back in September when we did the Hope Festival, the Esperanza Festival, where Luis Palau came in, and there were 1,200 people in this backyard, literally, right over there, 1,200 people, and several people committed their lives to Christ for the first time because they heard the gospel in Spanish for the first time ever. So just this beautiful thing that God's blessing us in doing these things. But not only do we have stuff going on with Gustavo, we have this diversity initiative that's happening down the road with Lincoln. Some of you, many of you know Pastor Larry Redman, who is half-time staff Willowdale, half-time staff with the CCO, the Coalition for Christian Outreach. And so he is placed on that college campus at Lincoln University, and he's working hard to be that bridge between our church, our community, and Lincoln University, an HBCU campus that's right down the road. And really, really and truly, you wouldn't even know it existed, right? I lived in this area for a long time, and it's hard to get on campus. but Larry's made those inroads and he's doing that. Several things have happened out of that. There was an African-American history bus tour that Larry organized. A group of us from staff went down to the Smithsonian Museum that opened last summer. Larry got us tickets to go down there. If you haven't been there yet, I don't know if the tickets are still as hard to get, but it is 100% worth it. It's amazing, the African-American History Museum down there. And just at the beginning of this month, we did the MLK celebration where we remembered the 50th anniversary of his assassination on April 4th. God has blessed us in all of these unique ways. And really and truly, this is an answer to prayer that we would be diving into this diversity initiative and asking God to do this in our church to reflect our community more on what it looks like. Now, the interesting slash hard thing about that also is that it's hard to get with this for some of us. You know, we've gotten emails and questions, and some of them are just kind of like, so is this just like a trend that you guys are in on right now? Like, is this like a phase, you know, like when your kid, you know, like wets the bed and then they grow out of it eventually? Like, or is this like, you know, like, are we just going to do this until you get bored with it and do something else? And you could ask those questions, right? Is this a phase? Is this a trend? Are we going to get bored with it? But we could also ask ourselves other questions. And this is really important for us today. We could ask ourselves, well, really and truly, is this of God? And is this of his gospel? Is this a part of his good news and what he intends not only for our church, but for the world? Because we are separated, we are segregated, and quite honestly, we are pushing back on hundreds of years of church history by leaning into this diversity initiative. Hundreds of years. So when we ask ourselves, is this of God? Is this of the gospel? Really, one of the best places for us to go, the best place for us to go, is to the scriptures, to see what God has to say about this. Because I'll tell you right now, this is not a trend. This is not a phase. We will not grow out of this. This is what God has for our church. So with that being said, I want to invite you to stand. We're going to read today from the book of Revelation, chapter 7, verses 9 through 17. And there'll be a little thing at the end here for you to respond as well. Here's what the apostle John says in this book of Revelation. He says, after this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and were holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. All the angels were standing around the throne and around the elders and the four living creatures. They fell down on their faces before the throne and worshiped God, saying, amen, praise and glory and wisdom and thanks and honor and power and strength be to our God forever and ever, amen. Then one of the elders asked me, these in white robes, who are they? And where did they come from? I answered, sir, you know. And he said, these are they who have come out of the great tribulation. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them in his presence. Never again will they hunger. Never again will they thirst. The sun will not beat down on them, nor any scorching heat, for the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. He will lead them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. So Revelation is one of these books. Actually, it's the book at the end of the Bible. And let's just be honest, it's hard and it's weird. And I, being a youth pastor for like over 10 years, whenever you ask teenagers what they want to talk about, the number one thing they want to talk about is sex. The number two thing they want to talk about is Revelation. Like, that's just like, help me figure out what's going on in Revelation. There's a lot of, you know, by category, by classification, it's an apocalyptic book, which means it looks at the end times. It looks, there's a lot of symbols, there's a lot of metaphor, there's a lot of imagery, there's a lot of stuff in here that doesn't always make sense to us. And unfortunately for us today, we are not going to really dive into a lot of those symbols and metaphors and imagery, because that takes a long time, and it's some of its theory and some of its research, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what we wanna look at today, for the sake of our diversity initiative, for the sake of what we've been talking about, is the one of the purposes of God that drives history. One of the purposes of God that pushes us to where we know that we're going to go someday. So the question is, if we know, because Revelation is the end times, this is where we know that God is pushing history. If we know how it's going to end up one day, if this is one of those purposes that drives history, how do we lean in to it now? If we know where it's going, how do we be a part of it now? Because it's not just this one day thing. It's also something we believe that God would have for us here and now on this earth. This idea of every tribe, every nation, every people, every tongue coming together to worship God. That's not just this far off pipe dream that might happen one day. We know that it's going to happen. But the question again is, what does it look like now here for our church and for us as people? Now, the cool thing about this is that this is not just a one-day thing that will happen that God sort of dreamed up at the end. This is something that was a part of his plan from the very beginning of time. So we have Revelation, right? We have the end times, the very last book of the Bible. But let's jump to Genesis, to the very beginning. Here's what we read in Genesis 1, 26 through 28. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." And so we see here at the very beginning, God creates human beings. He creates man and woman in his image. And it says in our image, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. There's a Trinity there. And so we see this, that as human beings, now just hold with me here for a second. Whether you believe in Jesus or not, one of the things that we believe as Christians is that every human being is created in the image of God. There's a stamp of the maker on your life. You are created in that image. But that image bearing that we do, we're called image bearers of Christ. It's not just for our benefit. There's also a job that comes along with it. If you look here, we'll highlight verse 28 here at the bottom in yellow. It said, God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, roll over the fish, the birds, everything living creature that moves on the ground." Now, what we call this, what Bible scholars call this, is this thing called the cultural mandate. It's this responsibility. It's this job that comes along with being God's image bearers. The fact that we are created in God's image means that we have responsibility. Now, this mandate, though, what does it actually mean? What are our responsibilities? Because, I mean, you could look at that. It says, be fruitful and increase in number. Typically, what Christians have kind of taken that as is get married and have babies. And then have more babies. And then more babies. Just fill the earth. That's what we do, right? But there's something more to this. Yes, it involves having families and growing, and we need people to kind of be a part of that role, that job. But there's something deeper here, and a lot of people who are a lot smarter than me have done a lot more thinking on this. So rather than me trying to teach it to you, I'm going to read you a quote from someone. This lady named Nancy Piercy wrote this book called Total Truth, Liberating Christianity from Its Cultural Captivity. She says, in Genesis, God gives what we might call the first job description, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. The first phrase, be fruitful and multiply, means to develop the social world. Build families, churches, schools, cities, governments, laws. The second phrase, subdue the earth, means to harness the natural world, plant crops, build bridges, design computers, compose music. This passage is sometimes called the cultural mandate because it tells us that our original purpose was to create cultures, build civilizations, nothing less. So because we are created in the image of God and because we have this cultural mandate and because God is a creator, he has also created us with the capacity to create. We can create life. God is the one who knits together in the mother's womb, but we as human beings play a pretty big part in that. But we are a part of that whole thing. It's something that we're called to do, is called to create. And with that comes creating cultures, building bridges, designing computers, composing music, building families, churches, schools, cities, governments, laws. It's all a part of God's intention from the very beginning. We weren't just going to stay where we were naked in a garden. Everybody thinks that we could have, well, I guess we could have ended up being naked because we would have never known better. But we would have created, and more would have happened because God created us with the capacity to do so. So what a lot of people look at when they see Revelation 7, what we're going to go back to in a second, just hold with me here. When they say, this is where we're going, it's actually what God intended from the very beginning. That he intended for cultures to be created, that he intended for diversity to happen. It's a part of our job. It's a part of our description, our responsibility of what we do. And if you look through the Old Testament in between and the rest of the Bible, between Genesis and Revelation, you see that there's diversity in the world. I mean, jump to Genesis 11, the Tower of Babel, where everybody wants to come together so that and they want to build this tower up to the heavens, but God confuses their language and scatters them. And they're scattered all over the earth. There's diversity right away, right there. They can't understand one another. There's separation. He spreads them out. You jump through the Old Testament. I'm reading Isaiah right now on my own, just kind of like for my personal reading. And you look in Isaiah and you see all of these different cultures and these cultures that come against Israel, against God's people. And God says, you know, one day I'm going to punish them for the bad that they've done to my people. But then he also paints this beautiful picture of the fact, but they too, these different cultures, these different tribes, these different languages, they too will one day be redeemed. They too will have the opportunity to come to know me as their God. If they repent and they believe, God draws different people into him all the time. You get to the New Testament, you see Jesus who puts together a group of 12 people who were very diverse and very different from very different backgrounds. There was a tax collector, there was a radical. They were fishermen. They weren't all the same kind of people. You get to Acts whenever the church is kind of getting started, and the people who were starting the church, the disciples, they kind of wanted to just stay in Jerusalem. They kind of liked that, like, ooh, we're comfortable here. We like this. And God, all of a sudden, Stephen dies. He gets stoned. The next thing you know, they're scattered all over the world, all over the known world, because God is always pushing them out further and further to diversity, to different cultures, to different languages, to different tongues. It's a part of God's method of what he wants to do. And so we come to the end of Revelation and we see that this is actually a fulfillment of what God intended from the very beginning. No matter how hard we fight against it, no matter how hard we try to squelch it, God has a direction that he wants his history to go. This is one of the purposes that drives history. So we have to ask ourselves, what does this actually look like? If this is where we're going, what is the description? What does it look like? So three things here for you real quick. Here's the first one, is that there is a plethora of people. Every point has two P's, so that's why I use the word plethora. Not really a word that I would normally use, but there's a plethora of people, right? It says, after this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one could count from every nation, tribe, people, and language. There it is. There's diversity, every nation, tribe, people, and language. Now, if you would go and study some of the history of foreign missionaries in the world, in just the recent history even really, you would learn very quickly that one of the first mistakes that that people would own up to that they made is that they would go into other cultures, and not only would they give them the gospel of Jesus, but they would also ask them to basically become American. So that's why when Samir was here 2 weeks ago from India, Samir, full-blooded 100% Indian, is married to another full-blooded 100% Indian named Jackie. I don't know if you know much about Indian culture. Jackie's not an Indian name. But years ago, her family, when they were evangelized, when they were said to become Christians, not only did they teach them Jesus, but they also brought them clothes to wear. And they gave them names. And so what happened was they tried to say, well, not only will you adapt to our religion, which is the good thing, right? We want them to know Jesus, but the mistake they made was not allowing that diversity, not allowing their uniqueness of who God made them to be to remain there. It's normal, it happens, but that's one of the big things, that's one of the major problems that we have here. Actually, there's a guy named Andrew Walls who is a missiologist who studies things like missions, and he says one of the strongest things that Christianity, culturally, that Christianity has over the Muslim religion, over Islam when it comes to evangelism, is that Christianity allows you to remain who you are. You don't have to change your culture completely, which is something that Islam has to do. You have to adapt completely to what they want. But Christianity, diversity is allowed. In fact, it's encouraged because we realize that if every day, every nation, tribe, people, and language are going to worship before God, we allow that uniqueness to remain the same. We allow their preferences in food, preferences in clothes, all of these different things. It stays the same. You don't have to change completely. You have to repent and turn from your sins. That's important. The only way to heaven is through Jesus. But it looks different from culture to culture to culture. It always makes me think about whenever we moved here 8 years ago. We came from California, but I'm from Pittsburgh originally, and everybody thought it would be a really good idea to get Flyers and Phillies and what's that other team? Eagles stuff. Like, they handed me stuff, and I cast a demon out of them and then, you know, sent them on their way. But no, seriously, like, I here's an Eagles hat. Here's a tiny little Phillies thing for your son. We threw them all away. But anyhow, did someone cry over that? My goodness. But here's the thing. Unless it messed up my relationship with Jesus, it really shouldn't matter that much, right? Like, if all of you Philly fans or wherever you moved to Pittsburgh, I would never expect you to cheer for the Penguins, the Pirates, or the Steelers, ever. unless of course it jeopardized your faith in Jesus. Then I would ask you, then it would be something that would need to change. But the culture that you come from, where you are, does not need to change. It's a part of what makes us unique and diverse, not only here in our area, but in the world as well. So we have a plethora of people at the end. So what does it look like us to lean into that plethora of people here and now? Not only do we have a plethora of people, but we need to look at where they are, their presence, and what they're doing. They're praising, standing before the throne of the Lamb. They're standing before Jesus. And guess what? They would not be there if it was not for Jesus, if they did not believe in him, if they did not have faith in him, if they did not accept him. This isn't like an all roads lead to heaven kind of thing. This is a Jesus is the way to heaven, but it's still, you keep that uniqueness of who you are, and they stand before the throne of God. Not only that, they are before the throne of God and they serve him day and night in his temple. They're worshiping, they're praising Jesus because they know who he is in their lives. This plethora of people, this multitude comes together and they're in the presence of God and they're praising God. They're praising Jesus for what he has done for them. So not only do we have a plethora of people who are in the presence of the Lamb and praise, but we have some protection and promises that are also important here. Danika, can you go to the next slide there? They're protected and they receive these promises. Here's what it says. We'll hold on this slide here for a second. It says, they were wearing white robes and were holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. Here's the thing about these white robes. White was a sign of victory. In fact, in this time, historically, when a Roman general would come back in and have his procession, his parade, when he was victorious in battle, he would wear all white. Palm branches were actually something that were waved as a sign of victory. It kind of makes you rethink that whole Palm Sunday thing, right? The people waving those palms knew that Jesus was going to be victorious. That's why they waved those palms. It wasn't just this peace thing. Yes, it was peace, but there was victory that was going to be had. And I love this. Salvation belongs to our God. That word salvation could also be translated rescue. God has rescued them. And I love that it says this. Salvation belongs to who? Who does it say? Yeah, it's to our God. It's not them. They're not the ones who earned their salvation. It belongs to God. And so they are protected. They are rescued out of their sin. They are before the throne. They are praising Jesus. But not only that, look at these promises that continue on here on this next slide. It says, and he said, these are they who have come from the great tribulation. They have washed their robes. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. There's that victory there. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them. In his presence, they are protected. Never again will they hunger. Never again will they thirst. The sun will not beat down on them, nor any scorching heat, for the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. He will lead them to springs of living water, and he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Do you see these promises that they receive? Do you see that? They have these promises that one day there will be no more tears. One day there will be no more death. No longer will they ever hunger. No longer will they ever thirst, because Jesus will provide means for everything that they need. Now, here's the cool thing about this. Not only are these promises for them, but what we would say here and now is that this is this future thing, one of these purposes that drives the drives history, these purposes of God. But you, if you believe in Jesus, you are a part of this plethora, of this multitude. That you receive these promises that one day, well, we know that God will shelter you in his presence, that you one day will never hunger, never thirst, you will never get burned, that because of Jesus on the throne, that he will lead you to living waters, he will wipe away every tear from your eyes. Do you know that you're promised those things? Isn't that beautiful? That one day this will be. And we lean into those promises and we trust in those promises when life is hard and it doesn't always feel like that here and now. We know that one day it will happen. Because we trust in God and we trust in his word and what he says. But here's what we have to remember, because we like that, right? Like, you like that idea of thinking like, no pain, no death, no any of that stuff, like nothing hard. We like that. Yes? Do we like that? Thank you. Okay, just making sure. Thank you. We like that, but here's the deal. We have to remember that those promises come in the context of this great multitude. Look what John writes just two chapters earlier in Revelation 5. He says, and they sang a new song saying, you being the Lamb, you are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals because you were slain. Jesus died for our sins. And it says, and with your blood, you purchased for God persons from every tribe, every language and people and nation. Does that sound familiar? You have made them to be a kingdom and priests to serve our God, and they will reign on earth. You see, this was a part of the original intention that when Jesus died, his blood, with his blood, he purchased for God people from all over the world. So that when we look at those promises, when we look at the fact that we are protected, when we look at the fact that we can praise Jesus, that we are in his presence, we have to do so realizing that we stand there and we praise in the presence with our African-American brothers and sisters, and with our African brothers and sisters, and with our Hispanic brothers and sisters. We go on and on and on. It's not just for us here, but it's with a great multitude, every tribe, every nation, every people, every tongue. So if we like those promises, it's not just for us. It's for everyone that comes to Jesus. Now hold with me here for a second, because there's something I think, I mean, know that I'm working through this on my own too, because this is a unique thing, I think, that we, the situation that we have ourselves, that we find ourselves in America. And I'll just give you a little disclaimer here. This is not as easy as it can be for us to go there. This is not a political statement. But I think we would not do well if we did not back up and look at our situation in our world, where we live in a country where we have people from different cultures, we have people from different nations, we have people who speak different languages. And we're not talking about how people got here or when they got here or any of those things. But if we really believe that one day that this is where we're gonna end up, every tribe, every nation, every people, every tongue worshiping together at the throne, and God has placed us here in this country for, we could say, for such a time as this, we don't know exactly why we're here, but perhaps, could we not lean into the fact that maybe God is placing at our feet friends of different cultures, friends of different nations, your neighbors, your coworkers, the people you run into at the Y, other parents in your kids' schools, if you're a student, other people in your schools. Could God not be asking us to lean into this in a unique way? God works in ways that we will not understand. I think we can all agree on that. But why don't we lean into this now? If it seems like God, you know, some of you might disagree, some of you might have a hard time with that, and I know there's a whole bunch of, that's a loaded thing to say. But if we can separate back and say, God, what are you doing here? What would you have for me? What would you have for our church? I just want to ask you the question, what would it look like for you to engage now? I mean, why don't we engage now? I mean, there are a few different reasons. There's probably more than this, but I want to give you three for me that I know have been really hard. The first is time. I don't think we engage because it takes time. I was reading a study this week from a guy named Jeffrey Hall, who was a professor at KU at University of Kansas. He did a study on the stages of friendship. Look at this. To move from your relationship with someone to being an acquaintance to just casual friends, it takes 50 hours of time. All right? But to move from a casual friend to the friend status, I don't know if that means your friend on Facebook or whatever the heck that means, 90 hours. To go from being a friend to a close friend, 200 hours. Just think about that. 200 hours. Now, a lot of us probably, if we took our noses out of our phones or out of our laptops, it might take less time than that. But the reality of our world right now is that it might take this much time to make a new friend, to even have a casual acquaintance. Now, I want to back up again and just say something here, is that this is a research study that's not done by a Christian, and I just have a thought that the blood of Christ can shorten those time spans in half or even more than that. I have met people who I have not known for even a minute from different countries, who speak different languages, who speak maybe a little bit of English, who I've run into in different scenarios, whether it's overseas missions or just playing soccer. But when I find out that they're a Christian, when they find out that I'm a Christian, there's a bond there. There's something that happens that you can't explain, that you can't describe, because we're all together one day, we'll be worshiping at the throne of the Lamb. And so there's something about this time thing. So for some of us, we'd be like, oh, it's too much work, right? It's just, it's, well, I've only known them for 190 hours, so we're not really close friends, right? There's a time thing here, but I think that if we lean into Jesus and the purposes that he has for us, he'll change our hearts. He'll change our minds. He'll move things faster along than we think or what the world thinks should move. So for some of us, it's time. For others of us, I think it might be fear. I think fear is a major factor, whether it's, I don't know how I'll communicate with them. What if they don't like me? What if I don't like them? What does it look like for us to actually lean into this whenever we're scared, whenever we're afraid? Pastor Larry posted this video on Facebook a couple weeks ago about this guy named Gary. And I'm going to just show you this little short, it's a 2.5 minute video about Gary. So will you watch this?
I'm a white male and I am prejudiced. The reason it is, it's something I wasn't taught, but it's kind of something that I learned. What can I do to change, you know, to be a better American?
I responded off the top of my head, but from my heart. And I told him, thank you. And I just came up with some thoughts about how he could sort of integrate his life and learn to have more empathy and compassion with people of color.
Your ability to just say, this is what I have these fears and prejudices, and I want to get over them, is one of the most powerful things that we can do. So what can you do? Get to know black families. Join a church if you are a religious person that is a black church or a church that is interracial. Foster conversation in your family and in your neighborhood where you're asking exactly those kinds of questions.
I think a lot of white folks wanted to hear that they could make that kind of admission and not be greeted with the anger that they fear, but rather understanding and a sort of productive way forward. I went down to North Carolina and I met with Gary and we furthered that conversation about race and asked each other hard questions, and it was amazing.
I said, this is somebody else I could talk to again, and here we are, we're talking again. When you get to know people, your fears were unjustified. Don't let it go by. If you got 8 million people responding positively to my insecurities, they must be having the same things.
Yeah.
It's just something that is we don't practice. And taking that first step is the hardest thing.
It's time for us to actually have a conversation with white folks, and it's time for white folks to have a conversation with each other about how it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. Just because people of color might be advancing, just because there are more immigrants from different countries in our society, doesn't mean that it has to come at your expense. There's just not enough of those conversations.
Do you hear what he said there about getting to know people? He says your fears kind of go away. You find out that it didn't really make sense. Those fears don't make sense whenever you actually have those conversations and you get to know people. I also find it really interesting that one of the most, I think it might be the most repeated command that God gives us, that Jesus gives us in the Bible, and it's just two words. Do you know what it is? Fear not. Those moments when we feel scared, there are things that we can legitimately be scared of. This is not one of them. Fear not. Jesus is in that. He walks you into that. He goes with you. In fact, he embraces it. So fear not. It takes time. Sometimes it's scary. But lastly, and I think this might be the hardest one for us, is that a lot of us just don't see a value in it at all. We see no value in diversity. We like where we are. We like being comfortable. We don't want to talk to people. We don't want to make new friends. There's just no value in it. Why would I even bother? I mean, I would beg of you that you would let God change your heart on this. And one of the reasons I feel like I can say this is because I have experienced the blessings and the benefits of being a part of a multicultural community. Now, the hardest part about that, though, is that I did not experience it in a church. The place where I experience a multicultural community is on a soccer field. Some of you know, I said I'm from Pittsburgh, but I moved here from Southern California. And one of the beautiful things about Southern California is that you can play soccer outside all year round. And so every Saturday morning, I would get together with this group of guys and we would play soccer. Now, here's a unique thing. When I first moved to Southern California from Pittsburgh, this was not like normal for me, okay? Like my high school had like 2 black families and 1 Asian family. I did not know diversity at all in my life. So when I first moved out there, I got there on a Friday night. I woke up on Saturday morning and I went to go for a bike ride or a run or something, I can't remember, and I walked out of the house I was renting, and down on the corner was a group of gentlemen from Mexico. They were day laborers waiting to get picked up to go to work. I thought it was a gang. Like, I turned around and ran back in my house. Like, that was my exposure to diversity, okay? So I got more comfortable as I was out there in Southern California, and I wanted to play soccer. Soccer's been important in my life ever since I was 4 years old. It's been something that I've been doing and still do several times a week, still even to this day. And so I found somebody at school, and I said, hey, okay, I really want to play soccer. Where do I go? And he said, hey, there's this great group of guys. He didn't tell me anything about them. They play Saturday mornings every week at Eaton Blanche Park. So I got directions. I showed up at Eaton Blanche Park, and this is kind of the scene that I walked into. Totally different for me, totally weird for me, totally crazy for me, and it was hard. But I made a decision. I'm going to stay. I'm going to play because I haven't played soccer in a long time, and I really want to play. Now, interestingly enough, right around that same time, another group of guys, we all started school around the same time, from Fuller, who were also all white, Fuller was my grad school, came and they started playing soccer as well. But they decided that they did not like the way that this game went, and they did not like the way that people treated them there, so they left and started their own pickup game with themselves. I did not go with them. Because here's what I learned. The Mexicans treated me like I was Mexican. The Africans treated me like I was African. The French guy, he hated everybody, so he was just mad to everybody no matter what was going on. It's just, that was it. And they weren't treating me poorly. It just was something that I was not used to. It was something that I was not, that wasn't what I was exposed to. And so I grew to end up loving these guys. And when we go back to California, when we go to visit, this is one of the first things I always think is, okay, can we please stay at least through Saturday so I can go and play soccer with these guys? Because a few of the things that I learned was, the angry French guy is like, if you look at the guy near my head who has no sleeves on and has tattoos on his arms, that's Christophe. He's the angry French man. He has a tattoo on the back of his head as well, in case you're wondering. But you would think you'd be petrified of this man. He looks like an ex-convict, and you walk up and he ends up being one of my best friends whenever I leave California. The man right above my head there, the guy, his name is Balaji. He has on the USA jersey. Balaji is from Nigeria. Balaji is a Christian man. I did not know he was a Christian when we got there. One of my oldest, dearest friends from out there. And I still keep up with him on Facebook and through text messages and emails. Hi, May. Two over from Balaji to the right. Not the guy holding the ball, the one beside him. When his cousin Tommy, who used to play with us, was beaten on a subway, on a bus, and is paralyzed still to this day. When that happened, this community came around Jaime and came around trying to help find the man who beat him. And they found him. But here's what happened. Not only did I grow to love these guys, not only did I grow to just continually just grow deeper and deeper relationships with them, but I got a fuller picture of what my world could look like. I learned how to play soccer differently. I think I became a better player. I think I became a better person because of my time with them. Now, I could have just walked away, right? I could have walked away. I could have gone somewhere else. I could have went and played with those other guys. But then I would not be who I am today. I would not play like I would today, and I would not be the person that I am today. Now, here's something that I found as I processed through this. Something incredibly unique about this whole situation is that if I would not have stayed, I would not have changed. If I would have left, I would still be the same. Who knows what God would have done? But as we were playing, we could come together and we could coexist because we had a common goal. What was our common goal? Soccer, right? I would get with a group of those guys, and just so you know, in that picture, there are probably easily 10 to 12 different countries represented right there. I would come together with those guys, and we found a common bond in putting a round ball in a goal to beat the other team. Now, I want you to think about this. If we have a common bond with people from different nations, different tongues, different tribes in Jesus, do you know how much we could accomplish? This common bond that we have, this goal that we have of not only loving each other, but loving the world around us. Do you know what that does to the people around us? Do you know what that does to the world around us? Do you know what it speaks to the culture around us? It tells people how big our God is. It tells people how important our gospel is. And it invites people into something that's bigger than themselves. You see, I don't want us to be a church, whether it's Jennersville or Kennett, my goodness. No matter how many other campuses we have, I don't want us to be a church of the people who go and start their own pickup games somewhere else. I want us to be a church that embraces the call that God has placed on our lives and tells us where we're going one day. I was reading something this week about just diversity and multicultural ministry and how hard it can be sometimes. And this guy was saying that probably one of the hardest things for white Americans, for churches like ours to get, or people of privilege, we could say, is that when you think about diversity in ministry, it's not about a handout. Like a lot of times we think like, oh, we're the people who have it all figured out. Let me just give this to you, you poor people who don't know what it's like to be us. He said, it's not a handout. He said, it's also not a hand up. If you think like a hand up, like, oh, you're down in this pit. I need to pull you out. I need to carry you. I need to draw you in. But in reality, it's not a hand out. It's not a hand up, he says, but it's a hand across. It's a hand that sits down with someone across the table from them and reaches across and shakes that hand and eats with them. The same guy painted this beautiful picture. He said, you know, a lot of times in America, we say America's the great melting pot, right? He says, don't be a melting pot. A melting pot, you just bring everything that you have from your culture, and we throw it into one thing and we melt it down and then it just is like brown soupy water. He says, America shouldn't be a melting pot. Churches, our ministries should not be a melting pot. It should be like a potluck. Where we all come, we sit down, we enjoy. Now I want to show you one more video. I know we don't normally show videos ever. I'm showing you two in one day. I want to show you one more video, and it's not a Christian video, just so you know. But I think it gives us this beautiful picture of what our world could be if we woke up. I think it gives us this beautiful picture of what our world could be if we embrace the call, this purpose of history that drives us, that God has for us. So please, to the screen.
Just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There's mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans.
Sorry, we're not going to watch it again. The song. I'm sure you've heard that song before. And what the world needs now is love, sweet love. And I would agree with that, but probably not in the same way that the songwriter would have intended. Because what the world does need now is love, right? But what do we need? We need the love of Jesus. We need the love of Christ that motivates us, that pulls us, into the direction of one day what will be, and how do we live and embrace that here and now in our lives. And the only way that happens is through Jesus, through his love. Because he didn't just die for you, he didn't just die for me, he did, but he died for everyone. Every nation, every tribe, every people, every tongue. So how do we lean into that here and now? And I want you to just think about where you are right now, not like just physically here, but where you are in your life. And I want you to think about what would happen if Jesus never came, if he stayed where he was, if he stayed in the comfortability of heaven, and he never left and came to earth, if he never knew what it was like to be human, if he never was tempted and never sinned, if he never did any of those things, I want you to think about where you would be. I'll tell you where you'd be. You'd be lost. Well, it's like for us, we like to stay where we are. We like to be comfortable. We like not to move. It takes too much time. We're scared, whatever it is. Some of us just absolutely see no value in this at all. But here's the thing. Christ saw value in us. And he came to us. And we are to model that. It's a part of our calling. It's a part of our responsibility. So this morning, we invite you to be a part of what God is doing. For some of you, it might be embracing him for the first time ever. For others of you, you need to realize that it doesn't take as much time and you have nothing to be fearful of. And for some of you, you need God to change your heart because you see no value in this at all. And he's the one who can do that. Salvation belongs to our God alone. And so we invite you today. In just a second, the ushers are going to come forward and we're going to take communion.